You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Come to feel what you need when what you really want inside. your life.
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people. Ghetto people.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and the honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashe. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. There's a saying, Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope all is well with you. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. Hoping, too, weather was accommodating for you to do it. Because if it wasn't, and it had to get done, it must get done, you got it done. That's right, because you got the will to make it happen. This is African Perspective. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. Top of the page, you'll see podcast programs. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that. There will be programs that are dated and titled. Thanks to my good brother, Brother Kwaku. Appreciate you, man. Well, the program we have here on Time for an Awakening, once again, this program is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 11 a.m. All times are going to give our Eastern times. Monday and Wednesdays from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Our Story with Baba West Johnson from New Orleans. Our Story with Baba West Johnson from New Orleans on Mondays and Wednesdays from 7 to 9. Thursdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. The Black Liberation Movement out of Mississippi. Brother Patrick Lumumba of the Geronimo Pratt Gun Club. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening. With Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, Time for an Awakening. On Sundays, 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Sundays, Pinckney to Pinckney. Activist Reverend Edward Pinckney out of Benton Harbor, Michigan. Sunday program from 5 to 6. And then at 7 p.m., once again, Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. The Inyasa Sim of Daily Revolutionary Thought. March 9th. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that Europe has had on our ability to think victoriously. Mama Marimba Ani. When I taught at Morehouse, a Negro college, once declared that I was a psychotic revolutionary. I said then, as I say now, that I take great pride in such an honor. Today, those bestowing this honor have grown to include homosexualized Africans and their adherent defenders, so-called black feminists, Marxists, Greeks, pacifists, compromised and frustrated spiritualists, and, of course, European intellectuals. Usually the best indicator of whether we are on the right path is the disapproval of those who are and uphold what we fight against. Since to be classified as sane in the West testifies to your insanity then, to be called the worst of the insane by Europeanized Africans and the like is the ultimate compliment. Affirm, I have separated my thought from European thought. Affirm, I have separated my thought from European thought. I say. March 10th. Powerless breeds a race of beggars. Powerlessness breeds a race of beggars. Kwame Ture and Charles V. Hamilton. Most Africans in Western society assume that integration is a two-way process of equal give and take. After all our hard lessons, the melting pot delusion is still alive and well in our community. Many of us all assume that so-called integration is a positive that we should aspire to. However, integration is not what has happened. What Africans and African culturalism that Europeans have allowed to be absorbed into their culture has assumed a lesser or subordinate importance and status. Therefore, in using the word integration, we may be using the correct dictionary denotation, but it's also incorrect connotation for Africans in the Western reality. Instead, we need a term that more appropriately fits this reality. Sub-integration would be the more accurate description because it is a term which includes not only the basic ideal definition of integration, but also includes the way in which Africans and our cultural aspects are introduced and incorporated into and recognized by Western culture and society. Be mindful here that we are not speaking of those ancient and traditional African ideas and technology that were stolen and distorted into the foundations of European thought and behavior, because those Africanisms are not accepted or admitted as African within European culture, thought, or society. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into what is inferior. Affirm, I do not strive to be integrated into what is inferior. I say, brothers and sisters, the Inya Sesim of daily revolutionary thought. Brothers and sisters, I am once again honored and very blessed to have as my guest today the irritated genie, Brother Ayo Kamathi. Brother Kamathi, how you doing, man?
I'm doing fantastic. And yourself, brother?
I am well. I am well. And hope to be well for some time. Well in mind and
absolutely.
Health. Well in mind and health. Physical health and mental health. That's for sure.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So how things going in B-more and D.C. area for you?
Things are going, man. We're doing the same work we're doing. We're preparing for this year, trying to get the year going off well. It's been going off well so far. Doing the lecture tour is going well.
Yeah, I see that. And I appreciate you sending me the information. I announce it on the air since, you never know who's listening, where they're listening from. So, I definitely promote what you're doing, Hopefully,
I appreciate it. Coming to Atlanta really had a major hit when we talked about the Three Kings.
Yes,
in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. A lot of people hadn't really heard much about that.
So right,
we were able to do that at the Black Wall Street Market.
Yeah,
the brother who's an artist, actually Brother Kalanji. I just met him. I just came back again and January, I think I came down, December, and maybe January, and I know February for Black History Month, I saw the brother and met him, and he had painted this beautiful picture of the Three Kings, and they have a whole group of other people with Dr. Chirumbari Kwao and others sitting together.
Outstanding.
I mean, it's beautiful, brother. I need to send it to you, and he said he's going to make prints of it. He wants to put it out there because he wants to get their message out.
Yes.
And I just thought that was wonderful. Once we put that word out, people start activating, and now we start seeing the African World Revolution come about. So it was fantastic.
Well, man, it has to happen. It has to happen now. It's not something for the distant future. It's now. Because the way things are shaping up and the way these Caucasians are, and the fact that they have the ability to do some heinous things, we have to check that and get strong as a people. Close ranks, pull resources, and do for ourselves. And that's what the Salah is doing. I'm so proud of Ibrahim Traore and all the other brothers and all the other countries that are starting to look at that and embrace it. I heard about Ghana, and I've heard about Senegal, and I heard about a few others. I
love to hear about Nigeria making that kind of move, or the Congo specifically making that kind of move, you know, because I heard that the
absolutely,
you know, with the mineral wealth of the Congo should be in our hands, you know, but we know the evilness of what we're dealing with, you know. We've seen it happen.
Yeah, we had the leader of the Congo just came to, I think it was Mali, but definitely came up to that region of the AES that's now making it a confederation. They're taking those three countries, and instead of being independent countries, they're creating a regional bloc, which basically says they're one unit, which is very powerful. And they just created a military, a new military, to protect the whole realm of all three nations. So that's a major move. Africa's moving in a direction that literally, if we just hang on and keep plugging away in our lifetime,
we could see it. Yeah.
Of Africa.
And I always hoped and prayed that I would see that before I expire. And it's coming to fruition, because at least this is, you know, the beginning of that. And I've been feeling so great about that, because I've always advocated for pretty much, in the last 50 years, that's almost adult life, that I've been a Pan-Africanist, you know, that I wanted to, and I embraced the Republic of New Africa. No, excuse me, I did. I went to Republic of New Africa. I'm talking about the importance of One Africa, you know.
That's right.
I've embraced that, and I'm committed to that. You know, I broadcast us on this program. You know, because this program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. That's the deal. Sovereignty. Nobody speaks for Africa but Africans, for African people. The motto of this program, the logo of this program, is Pan-Africanism or perish, unify or die. And that's, you know, that's the commitment. And we're seeing it happen. You know, it's awakening, you know. And the reality is, even though these crackers have stole from Africa for hundreds of years, pillaged and plundered, Africa still has more wealth than any place else on this planet. And it should be in Africans' hands. It's about time it's been in African hands. I don't give a damn what the Europeans say or the United States says. You know, no, it's Africa. And it should be, we should be able to take this to a world court, although I don't have a lot of faith in that. Hell, to me, we should develop our own court, take it to court, and then we sue everybody else for what they have done to us. You know, find ways to reclaim, recapture, restore all the gold, all the diamonds, all the bauxite, titanium, cobalt, you name it, they took it, to get it, either get it back or some kind of compensation based on, you know, fair market value.
Yeah, well, I definitely think that that there's room for that, and it's a necessity for us to get what's coming to us. And as we go to reclaim that which they've taken, I think we have to be mindful as well, like you just said in the very beginning, and you said it perfectly. We know what they will do, because Eric Prince, who was the head of what they call Blackwater here in the U.S., Eric Prince has come out publicly, did an interview and said it's time for us to recolonize Africa.
Arrogant son of a bitches.
We need to understand what that means when we hear terms like that, because sometimes we hear the words and we use them, but we don't marry it onto what the real reality and meaning of that is. When we say recolonize, and particularly in the modern context, we're talking about mass murder. We're talking about rape. We're talking about killing of African leaders. We're talking about taking control of our food supplies. We're talking about mass injection wars. We're talking about things that we see are on the horizon. And now that we have such a strong military bloc in West Africa that's partnered with the second most powerful military in the world, I never want people to forget that, because what we haven't had since Songhai Empire. Since the Songhai Empire, we're talking about hundreds of years. We have not had a militarily sound African bloc that can defend itself.
And that's by design.
We're building.
And that's by design.
That's by design.
Yes.
Right. And now that we're building that, it's presenting itself. Like you said, this is the opportunity for us to go get what's owed to us and prevent it from coming again and happening again. I want to mention something. Recently, I listened to, it's an Asian. He was out of China. And he was talking about how the Chinese have gone into the Africa, and instead of being, according to his words, instead of being colonialists and taking from Africa, he said, we've helped to build infrastructure. But then he said something else, and I've said this for years, that we need to start being concerned about it. And now I want to put it out there more publicly, because I said that this is where it would be going. And if we make the right decisions, we can steer this the way we want it to go. But he said, Africa should be for Africans. I said, okay, that's beautiful. That's true. But then he said something that was very disturbing. He said, and we're working with Africa, but now the West needs to work with Africa, and India needs to work with Africa. And he started naming all of these places that need to, quote unquote, work with Africa. Mm. What I heard, because I said this many years ago to people I knew, and we need to start thinking and listening and understanding the time we're in. I said, the next one is not going to be the Berlin Conference. I said, the next one, if we don't take into our own hands our future, the next one would be the Beijing Conference.
Mm.
And instead of European nations sitting down and looking at Africa as a meal ticket to carve up and eat and devour, it would be China, India, Brazil, South America, the U.S., Europe, the entire world would take and look at Africa, and then we would really be looking at a very frightening situation. Mm-hmm. The beauty of that reality is that when we can see it before we get there, we now understand how important it is for the AES to become powerful, because you can only make a meal out of something that feels like it's dinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to go into a lion and make him a meal. That's not going to be an easy thing to do. Whereas a duck is a lot easier meal to prepare. As African people, when we are militarily aligned and we have a working relationship internationally with one another and large population bases around the world, we're not an easy target when we are strong, which is not an easy target. And instead of making us a target, if someone's looking for a target, they'll pick somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
When we are not aligned, when we are not working together, when we don't have a military bloc and powerful bloc that cares about the people like the AES, we become very much open for a second part of the Berlin Conference. And if we allowed that to happen, which we will not, we would not recover from that.
And that's why we need to establish this. And that's why we need to put in check all colonialists, neo-colonialists, traitors, and so forth. And those who would undermine different countries. Because you look at Agami in Rwanda and what he's done in the Congo. And he needs to be checked. And to me, if those individuals need to be, you know, eliminated or removed, we have to do it. This is not about feeling and about what has been done in the past. It is about right now and going forward. Because, go ahead.
What you said about Kagame, what I've learned about him, this is a dangerous guy, man. I say dangerous, I mean this is a dangerous guy. I have to say this, though, because it's the responsible thing to say in this discussion. He, in my estimation, is literally presenting himself as the Jew of Africa. Meaning the way that Kagame and his whole regime in Rwanda is treating the other African nations and treating the Congo. How do I want to say this? I want to say this gingerly. Of course, we were 100% against mass slaughter in Rwanda. So mm-hmm. I'm not ever going to say that we want to see our people hurting each other. I will say this, though. We don't ever put that into proper context in to the degree we don't talk about what the Tutsis were doing to the Hutus and how when the Hutus finally came to power and were able to run the place politically, how they shot and murdered the president of the Hutus and what happens to a people once they constantly face an oppression and abuse and you start killing their leaders. They're not going to let it just happen. Again, I'm not justifying what we saw happen in Rwanda. What I'm saying, though, is these same Rwandans, you know, you've been, of course, we know that the Europeans put that in place to put you over top of the others there. So we understand that that wasn't created by our own people. But at some point, you got to take responsibility and stop participating in it. And quite frankly, the massive genocide, theft, and corruption that Rwanda is involved in Africa, particularly in the Congo, it's coming to a point where we got to say, well, wait a minute. What's the difference between you and the Jews? You're saying that you're a victim. You're talking about, you keep reminding me about the Rwandan genocide, but you're committing genocide against brothers and sisters in the Congo. You're committing open rapes, murders, and genocide. I mean, you're raping women. You're raping men. You're acting like a European. You're acting like a Jew. How are we supposed to then look at Rwanda any different? What are we complaining about European colonialism if we have a so-called African group who's doing this? And I'll say one more thing that Rwanda's doing that I don't hear people talking about. From what I understand, and I have a limited understanding, but they're not just involved in pillaging the resources and committing chaos and genocide in the Congo, but they're also going nation to nation under the guise of development, economic development, and pretty much getting into countries and being like a black version of a almost World Bank or IMF and talking about helping the countries develop, but it's under Rwandan economic leadership. And so they're almost kind of like the IMF taking over countries economically and guiding their development. But it doesn't appear that they're doing it in what I would say is really the true interest of African people, because if you really are doing it in the interest of the development of African people, then you wouldn't be helping exploitation and murder and genocide in the Congo. You can't do both of those at the same time. It doesn't make sense. So it seems more like they're taking almost like out of the playbook of the Jews, you know, create havoc and murder and genocide, steal wealth and resources, make your place look good, present yourself as the victim consistently, and then go and victimize other people. And I think that Africa, we don't want the Jews there. We don't want no black Jews there, meaning not a person with Jewish belief system, but acting like Jews, you know, oppressors and genociders. We don't want that in Africa.
It is interesting that how you put this, because at this stage in time, you know, because of the technology that you can talk to someone across the pond in real time, that what he's doing, Kagame, and how he's doing it is a great affront to African people, and we as African people need to put a check on him. It's just like you said, the country, how it was devastated, and they put him in leadership. They rebounded, because in the West, if you get information about Rwanda in the West, it is information that says to you that Rwanda is the most organized, the most clean, the cleanest, well-governed country in East Africa, you know, and it is a model for Africa. But yet, when we know what's really happening and what Kagame has done and is doing, it is not in the interest for African people. And we need to, as those in the Sahel and us as Africans, who are sympathized with Africa being one and so forth need to put a check on his ass. That's how I look at it.
I agree with you, and it has to happen soon because if we look at history, we need to understand something. One of the reasons that the transatlantic slave trade was able to happen, once the Moors were put out of Southern Europe in the Spanish Inquisition, what a lot of them ended up doing is organizing, getting cannons and weapons from the West, because England wanted to make sure that they didn't come back into Southern Europe. And they went and launched wars against the West African empires. And it was those wars that destabilized Africa to open up the door for the transatlantic slave trade. So if we don't understand right now what Rwanda is forcing the African continent to do, is look at the premise of a massive, because Rwanda, his military, this guy's not a joke. You know, he's been aligned with the West. And if a regional war broke out, it's likely that the U.S., depending on who's in office, would support Rwanda. Definitely the Jews would support them because they operate in the same construct as the Jews, and they want access to the resources of the Congo.
Right.
They would promote a major black-on-black war across the continent of Africa, trying to engage everyone, in which case it would open the door again for what we talked about before, the transatlantic slave trade. So I agree with you. We have to do something about Kagame, and we have to do it fast, and we have to do it effectively because we can't afford for Africa to collapse. This is the very moment when the West Africa is building itself and Southern Africa is trying to break itself from shackles. East Africa has promised if it would get itself together outside of Kenya.
Right.
And so
but you know,
we have a great opportunity.
But even in East Africa, we do. Although Kenya is an issue, especially when they were paid and went along with going to Haiti, you know, that just bothered the hell out of me, you know, but still, but Kenya and Tanzania and many other East African countries. And of course, it would be easy for Kagame and Rwanda to get those countries into his fold. And see, all of these divisions, and of course, Southern Africa still is an issue because Southern Africa is still run by Caucasians, you know. Now, Namibia, the Germans have went back into Namibia, you know. The Indians have gone back into Uganda, you know. So the reemergence of colonialism by these countries that were there previously is happening, and we need to check all of that. That's why a strong, unified Africa. You know, Kwame Nkrumah said it. He said it back in 1957 when Ghana gained its independence. You know, it's not just Ghana. You know, I read these periodically, you know, about what happened with Ghana. And I read these, excuse me, and 'cause we have to know, you know, what happened. And Kwame Nkrumah, when they gained independence back in 57, he said this. Let me find this right quick. I know it's going to be here. Yeah. Then there's another part of it, of what he said, that is equally as important. And prophetic. Okay, hold on now. I'm coming to it, brothers. Thanks for your patience. There he is. Here we go. He said, "I believe strongly and sincerely that with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, the African culture united under one federal government will emerge not just as another block to flaunt its wealth and strength, but has a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is built not on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on hope, trust, and friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. He said that a few years after the independence of Ghana in 1957. He said that in 61. But here's what he said some years later. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling among ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered heretofore. How prophetic. I mean, every time I read that, it just angers me because it is so true. It is what has happened. And now there's an emergence, at least in West Africa, in that area. And I'm hoping that other Africans and statesmen come to realize that it is the only way. You know, when they talked about independence in one Africa, you know, there was a few countries that didn't want to go with it. They wanted to go slow. We have our country, we have our resources, and we had a leader who was siphoning off all the good and making deals with those outside, and so the people were still poor. The country was not developed. You know, and you know, I know you've been to Africa. I've been to Africa, and it saddens me at times when you realize we have more wealth than any countries outside of Africa. But yet, all those other countries, like what has happened in the so-called Middle East, what they were able to do because of petrol. You know, I mean, all them countries: Qatar, Oman, Yemen, Saudi Arabia, look at them, with the exception of all those that are near, all those who are near Israel or Palestine. But those other countries are well developed. And how much more well developed could many African countries be if they had control of their resources and control of their land and had an understanding of the people? I'm sorry. Go ahead, brother.
I think that one of the things we need to do, you mentioned you were hoping that the leaders would wake up and see that these brothers have the way. I would say it'll probably, and again, it's my suggestion, my sight, but I think we're going to have a different mix of approaches to get where we want to go. I say that because when we saw Haiti win, there were a bunch of different factions in Haiti. And until things got under the leadership of Jean-Jacques Dessalines, peace be upon him.
Mm-hmm. Ashe.
You know, there were victories. Like under Toussaint, we had already won, but because he loved the Europeans so
That's
much,
right.
he was a Christian.
Yeah.
It stalled the victory. So mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't kidnapped him, we would not have had the story that we have of a free Haiti, to be honest with you. So. It was General Dessalines who took us to victory. I'm saying that to say the idea that the leaders will come together, just like in Haiti, some will, and it will be, to your point, if we can get decent, good, non-corrupt leaders throughout Africa to support the AEL, the AES, our brothers in the Sahel, mm-hmm. Barbara Goita in Mali, Barbara Ibrahim Traore in Burkina Faso, and Baba Chiani in Niger. If we can get leaders to do that, that'd be great. But really what we need to do, because it's our time, we have the youngest population on the planet.
That's right. That's right.
The young people already are on board with the AES. I'm going to be honest. I mean, it's going to sound, but truthfully, the young people going to have to be young and use their youth to their advantage. Now, it doesn't mean that people who are there that are older and entrenched and mean well are going to be moved out. But I just got to be honest. They can't wait for these corrupt, old in their ways, behind in their ways, rigid and corrupt and unwilling to see a new day emerge. They can't wait for them. They're going to have to push them out the way, whatever it takes. And then connect with them, connect with the AES, and then do it without the object of greed. We wanna grow and work together, but we gotta stop waiting. And I'm not calling for pure, unadulterated lawlessness, but I am calling for a different. We can't just wait for these corrupt leaders
right,
to do
something. Exactly.
Mugabe's not gonna become non-corrupt. He's not gonna just become non-corrupt. It's not gonna work like that. Power bends to greater power. And the young people in Africa have an energy and an excitement now and a capacity that we got to mushroom it up and make it roll over the corrupt leadership and probably blend into more of a consolidation. Because honestly, I saw a brother doing a piece on the internet yesterday. I was watching it. And he made a great point. Before the Berlin Conference, 1884, 1885, and the invasion of the African continent, there were regions, but there weren't necessarily what we call countries. And
right.
I'm saying that to say, I think that it's time for us to have, if not a monarch, at least a centralized respect for leadership and authority that's working, which
right.
at this point will be the AES.
That's right. I agree.
And then to galvanize, not just in Africa, but galvanize. Truthfully, right now there's a crisis in black leadership in the West, just to be honest.
Yes.
It just is. Why don't we look and say, hey, we got great leadership there that has power, they have resources, they're organizing. Why don't we see ourselves as an extension of that and secure their interests and work to secure the economic interests of both they and us in a business relationship across these waters, socio-political, economic, business partnership, and racial partnership, such that we stop allowing the lines that have been drawn for us to manage our movement. Who am I to allow someone else to tell me I, as an African, can't help the AES or be helped by the AES?
Right.
Why would we even listen to those kind of rules? I don't think we should have the lines that we have even in our minds of what can be done. If we don't like the leadership in certain countries and they're just too corrupt, then maybe they're not leadership. And maybe we just figure out a way to – I said this years ago. I really believed it then, and I believe it more now. It was really when Baba Magufuli was in place in Tanzania. I said we should independently, as African people, without asking – we should appoint him as the global monarch for African people because he was just such a good man and he was a good leader
right.
and he wasn't corrupt.
Right.
And we say, look, you call the shots, we do it. Why? Because it will galvanize us. We won't be able to fight each other. We'll have one place that we go with someone who we know means well for our people and is doing a great job. He becomes more powerful because imagine the power of being able to say something and all African people on the planet agree with you and take your word as the gospel.
but more importantly, begin to implement and take movement in that direction. That's the deal, you know,
that's the thing. That's why that's what the point of them being presented and established as the monarch. What that means is, first of all, you got to trust the person. If they're not absolutely trustworthy, then it's a bad decision. But if they're trustworthy, what it means is when you're a monarch, there is no – once you've decided something happens, you say it goes, it is implemented. That's what a monarch is. There's not a debate. It's not a democracy. I don't think this is going to work for us in this modern context. We don't need a democracy as it's stated and constructed today. The democracy needs to be the democracy of our agreement that we'll take someone who has good leadership and go with them as long as that leadership is sound and then do something with it. That's the only democratic part about it, that we've agreed that we're going to do it.
Right.
And then we take some real leadership and get something done.
Yes.
And I think this is the time with the AES, because you don't just have one person. You got three
right.
strong black men,
mm-hmm.
which now put men back in the position where we're supposed to be in leadership and responsibility and vision and war and everything that you need men to be doing with the support of women and children. We have three men now who are doing it. They're showing unification. And now, in my estimation, what will benefit them is to have an overwhelming support from African people worldwide in support of what they're doing for them and their group and for all of us.
Mm-hmm. I agree. You know, I always like the idea of a cadre of leadership, that we don't have a particular leader. We have, you know, a leadership group that if somebody's knocked off, you know, the thing don't die. The movement continues. We turn the page. So we don't have a charismatic leader, but we have a charismatic program. And we all buy into the program, and we select this person, and this person has the leader of that program, and they guide that program. We move in that direction, you know. That's that, but I like yours as well. As long as leadership comes to the fore that is righteous and honest and just, and is going to move our people out of the clutches of ignorance and and not allow them to continue to be played and manipulated and undermined or even murdered or killed, I'm down with that. We need that. We need it, and we need it globally, not just in the western part of Africa. We need it across the continent, and just like you said earlier, with African people in other parts of the world. Imagine in the Caribbean. Hell, imagine here in this country. I know that we firmly believe that we're just as American as crackers, you know, and this is just as much ours as it is theirs, unfortunately, the majority of us, but there is a good number of us who are nationalists, who are Pan-Africanists. There's a number of us who would embrace a collective mindset to do for ourselves, as opposed to begging government or wanting to be part of the Congress and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think that it's coming, and I love what's happening, and I'm glad that it's happening before I go, because I want to believe that it is on the, just like you said, it's on the horizon. You know,
that's right.
It's on the horizon,
and it's here. And I would say I like what you said. I think it would be a combination of the two, and I'm going to tell you why. When you said, like, leadership, and we're just talking, these are ideas.
Sure.
I think it's a great conversation.
Sure.
I think, so there's two things. Clearly, we heard Dr. John Henry Clark and other of our leaders said that we need to have a program that's a plan in place so that it's not restricted to success based on the leadership of a charismatic individual. But that's one part of it. It's no question that that's needed. There's a also in that too, though. The also is almost like when you study the animal kingdom. You can have certain type of dogs that you can have, and you can leave that dog at home because you studied how that dog is in its pack.
Mm-hmm.
But a wolf, can't have no pet wolf and leave him in the house. It doesn't work that way.
Mm-hmm.
The wolf is a pack animal in a different kind of way.
Right on.
And yep. That wolf is going to go wherever you go, and it's not a debate or negotiation. And so if you tie the wolf up, many dogs, you can tie them up and hold them, and they'll be fine. The wolf will bite his leg off to get freedom. So there's a nature that we have to take into account, too. As African people, we really look at what we've done in times we've made tremendous moves. Have we had those situations, like you said, where it was a program and plan? Absolutely. But just as often, I would say, perhaps, we've had a tremendous leader who sparked that, and that's what's led us to that. So we had Narmer, who started the first dynastic period.
Right.
And united the lands, the Scimitarii, the uniter of the lands, Upper and Lower Kemet.
Mm-hmm.
So his leadership was incredible. So that we start our dynastic period. But after him, every king, every Sultan wasn't an armor. And some of them, based on circumstances, came up, and then they did tremendous things. But there was a system in place that even if you weren't the greatest Sultan ever, it still worked.
Right.
Kind of to what you're talking
right.
about.
Because the program is in place.
It's gonna be
right.
The program is in place. So I think what it is, and this is my, again, it's an estimation or opinion, we got three charismatic, strong leaders who've unified. So it has everything out of what we need. Unification, black manhood, they have humility, but they also have strength. Like everything you want. West Africa, where it's warm. Some of the greatest of the last empires that we had were West Africa. The same place Timbuktu was, the great center of learning. Everything about it is nostalgic, and it kind of works in our interest. And then the vast majority of us in the Western Hemisphere are from West Africa. So it just is the perfect place for us because that's where most of us left
mm-hmm.
from when we came here.
Mm-hmm.
We were brought here, I should say. So I think it's the perfect scenario that we have three charismatic leaders to follow now. To your point, they're not going to live forever.
Mm-hmm.
So what's put in place needs to be a program to unify all of Africa on a program, and not just Africa traditional on the land, soil of the continent, but African people in the diaspora who see themselves as Africans, who work for the interests of the empowerment of African people. I think that program has to happen as well. But these men, in my estimation, are the ones to set that program in place. It doesn't present itself.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Because, I mean, they're in the forefront. They have committed. They're out front in this battle. And to me, the most out front of them is Ibrahim Traoré. You know, somebody's already saying that he should be the leader of Africa. And I pray for him because, I mean, he's doing things in breakneck speed. Let's be real. He's taken the mantle and he ran with it. What's happening in Burkina Faso is just phenomenal. The agricultural growth, the technological growth is phenomenal. And it shows what can and must be done when real leadership takes over. I hate to go back to Kagame, you know, because I know he sold out to the West, and that's why Rwanda looks the way it looks. You know, it's supposed to be one of the cleanest places on the continent, you know, but its leadership is corrupt. And so that, to me, that negates any damn thing about Rwanda if the leadership is corrupt, because it's not going to benefit the people, you know.
And they're destroying the sovereignty of other
African
nations.
Yeah, right.
It's not just that
right.
they're corrupt in their own space, but
mm-hmm.
look, the wealthiest mineral-rich region possibly in the world could be argued that it's the Congo.
The Congo, yes.
And
mm-hmm.
he's helping to prevent us from getting a strong Congo that's independent, self-sufficient, but interdependent with the other African regions,
mm-hmm.
such that would now make the African continent, if we were unified properly, the strongest unit on the planet.
Mm.
The strongest. But he's preventing that
mm-hmm.
by creating rape and murder and torture. Even if tomorrow they said you guys are free, what kind of process do they have to go through to undo the pain of the rape and the and the pedophilia and the murder and the psychological trauma that they've caused generations there. So it's always been a critical situation. But I think now, based on what we have to gain and what we have to lose, it becomes a priority that all responsible African people around the world are going to have to start saying, hey, something's got to be done about Rwanda.
And then something has to be done, not just with Rwanda, but others like them. And something has to be done with the potential unification for African people. Because when you look at these Caucasians and what they're doing, and they have the weaponry, they have the technology, they have the ability to do all kind of nefarious shit, that we got to put all of that in check. You know,
I would say, and I agree with that. What I would say in addition is, because you said it, I mean, you couldn't have been stated better earlier. And I'm gonna say this again, because I don't want people to forget this, because you're going to hear me saying it more and more frequently. The Beijing conference.
Mm-hmm.
Let me be clear. Like you said, the Indians are moving in.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about the Portuguese, but you said the whites are moving into Southern Africa. They mm-hmm. are. You got whites, Afrikaners, saying we're going to have our own
right.
region and country in Africa. We have all these people thinking that they have rights. The Arabs control the northern rim of Africa. No. Africans are going to control Africa. Africa for the Africans.
I say.
At home and abroad. But mm-hmm. in order to do that, it's not just words. It requires serious and sophisticated action, because we can't just recklessly without thought do it, because then we would inspire a collective unified effort to fight against us.
Right.
So in other words, what I'm saying is, like the Haitians did in the Haitian Revolution, they didn't just go out and say, we're going to fight all the enslavers. They didn't do it like that. They sat down in the woods and said, okay, the first thing we're going to do, we're going to burn all the crops. First, the women are going to poison the slave master.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a plan.
We're going to poison the slave master. It was a plan, yes.
Then we're going to come in and kill all the white folks
mm-hmm.
and then burn down the plantation. So once they come here from overseas, they don't have anything to come to because we burnt it down.
Mm-hmm.
Then, as we start to go into war, we're going to side with one group against the others until the French are the last ones left. And then when the French are the last ones left,
we're going to defeat them
and we'll become free.
That's
now,
right.
I want people to understand. This is not conjecture. This is not a fancy novel. This was strategic, well thought out planning and preparation in warfare for the interests of African sovereignty and freedom. It's the only time in the history of the world that any enslaved, displaced population
That's
of
right.
people have physically defeated their enslavers in battle
mm-hmm.
and become sovereign. And mm-hmm. the reason that what makes it even more glorious is that they didn't just become sovereign in battle. They defeated the largest, not one military,
That's right.
but the most powerful militaries, multiple ones. English, the
mm-hmm.
Spanish, and the French
mm-hmm.
of that day.
Mm-hmm.
It's never been done before. But how did they do it? They didn't do it by just reckless banter or the idea that they wanted to be free. It was bloody. It was hard. It was difficult. It required thinking. It required training, preparation, and it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. When we were talking about, you know, leadership, you know, seeing things, one thing I know about the Haitian Revolution is different than, like, when they talk about the American Revolution. You had a couple of people in America fight the American Revolution. I mean, it was a small percentage. The people in mass did not go out and fight the American Revolution. It's just not true. In Haiti, in mass, that means the children were out there in battle.
Yeah, everybody.
It was an organic,
mm-hmm.
organic. The people are going to fight for our independence and freedom, whether they were trained or not. Most of them got trained, but many of them didn't get trained. But they was out on the battlefield one way or the other. Whatever they had, we're going to go out here. Freedom will belong to all of us. I'm saying that to say, in the modern context, as African people, all of us can start looking at our capacity to contribute to the sovereignty of African people.
Shay, I agree.
And figure out what we need to do, not just talking.
Mm-hmm.
How
but
do we
actions.
Plan?
Mm-hmm.
How do we plan for which groups we can work with now, which groups we can't work with? Who is the major issue that we have an issue with? What do we do to deal with that? Who is the greatest threat that we have? How do we deal with that threat? What is the greatest thing on the board that we have, which right now is the AEF? How do we maximize our support in that region?
Mm-hmm.
These are things that require strategic planning and preparation and thought.
Because as you look at the Haitian Revolution, just as you stated, it was physical, it was mental, it was strategic. All were on board. Bookman said to them, throw away the white man's God and you will be free. He didn't say you could be free. He didn't say you might be free. He didn't say it's possible. No, he said, throw it away and you will be free. That's what they did. And they were on accord and they worked. They had the whole island. They had the whole island. The Spanish came in and then took the eastern part of the island and made it the Dominican Republic. And you see how evil the Dominican Republic, because of color consciousness and racism, is, and how they treat Haitian people. You know. So all that we have is there. I'm going to take a break, Brother Ayo, okay?
Sure.
We're going to take a break. And then we come back from the break. There's a lot of callers, brother, you know. But what we're talking. But I'm sorry, go ahead. Say what?
I said, well, once you come back, let's go to them.
Okay, yeah. Because, I mean, what we're talking about is for African survival. It's for developing an African reality in this century. And not 2070. We're talking about now. This is when, I mean, I really appreciate this program, brother. I really do. We're going to have this, man, Brother Kwaku, man, put this program up ASAP, okay? Because this is a good program. Appreciate you.
Yes, sir.
Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Well, for your information, a lot of my brothers got education. Now check it. You got your Wall Street brother, your blue collar brother. You're down for whatever, chilling on the corner, brother. Your talented brother. And to every one of y'all behind bars, you know that Angie loves you. But my black brother, to me, you give me what I need. I'm so proud. I'm so proud. I love you for staying strong. You got it going on. I'm so proud of you. Going through thick and thin, brothers, you're gonna win. I'm so proud of you.
I'm so proud of you.
Whenever you're facing doubt, brothers, gonna work it out. I'm so proud.
I got my unshakable faith
in your life.
I want you to know that
I'm here for you.
I'm here for you.
My brother,
strong brother,
there is no one other.
I want you to know that I'm here for you. Only you,
dear brother,
I should love you.
I never try to hurt you.
You are listening to Time For an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. Angie Stone. I saw some stuff about Angie Stone that says that because she was in a car with a whole bunch of other people and she's the only one that died, that this was a hit. This was a murder. Brother Ayo, you hear anything about that, man?
The only thing I know is that the sister said that they had stolen her rights to her music and they cheated her out of a lot of money and she was going to have to go and get her money.
There it is, then. It sounds just like Whitney Houston, don't it? And many others.
And I watched the video of Sister Angie Stone talking about how they robbed her. Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's the thing. You know, when you are done wrong, and then that's how evil these people are. When you're done wrong, and you bring it to the attention of authorities and so forth, the wrongdoer should just be right, but it's not. It's not like that. It's not that easy that they will make things right that they've messed up. They don't want to do that. That's not in their, you know, in their spirit to do that. That's why I'm saying, even for us, you know, we have been done a tremendous wrong by the world. And I don't look for anybody in the world to do something to change that. We have to. Go ahead, brother.
You said something earlier, and how do I want to say it? This just, and I'm not disputing it. I think it's beautiful on the surface. But you were reading Baba Kwame Nkrumah, and he was saying, we're going to rise, and we're not going to do it at anyone else's expense. In other words, we don't have to put others down in order for us to build ourselves up.
Right.
Now, I like it in theory.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I would make an adjustment, at least on my thinking. We're going to rise no matter what it takes. However, it is not our way to step over and step on innocent people. But honestly, I don't necessarily feel like it's not going to be at somebody else's expense. In fact, I want it to be at other people's expense. Like the bad guys, I don't want to not have to tear them down to get up. I'm glad that they're bad guys so that we don't just have to get up on by our own bootstraps. We can step on somebody that deserves it. So in my spirit, I look forward to stepping on some of these dogs, these child races. I mean, right now, there's a guy named, he's a white dude, but his name is Ryan Massa. His name is Ryan Massa. This guy is documenting. There have been 400,000, roughly estimated 400,000 children under the Biden administration that have been child sex trafficked over the border into this country. 193,000 from Guatemala. He says that before they even get to, and it's incredible the kind of information he's giving you. This is not speculative. He's showing you some of them. He's interviewing some of them. They had one young girl who talked about the fact that she was raped, the estimate between 12 and 15 when she escaped. And this is in America now, coming across the world, coming from Guatemala to America. Estimated 30,000 times. I don't even know what that means. I have to question whether or not I've had sex 30,000 times in my own life.
For real? I mean, that's crazy.
This is what people are not talking about. Right. This is the, I know that it's crazy. Listen, this is 193,000 just from Guatemala. It's over 400,000. Listen, the slave trade that is Jewish sponsored, how do we know? Because this same guy, Ryan Massa, went and investigated. There's a company called Jewish Family Services. They don't even hide it. They're the one getting all of the money from the U.S. government. We're talking about billions upon billions of dollars and are over here sponsoring this child sex trafficking. So we're talking about literal, as we're talking on the phone right now. I couldn't believe this stuff. I looked and we saw, I didn't know that they still did this. I remember back in the 1800s and 1700s, they had child labor camps. But right now in America, many of these factories, when you go see who's working there, it's children. And they're from overseas. And they were showing some of the stuff that happened. They're in these factories. They fall in something. They get blended in and get killed. I saw one guy carrying something across a roof. The roof caved in. He died, or at least broke his legs. I mean, the kind of atrocities that America is committing now, and it's coming out now with the whole Elon Musk Doge thing. The things that are being uncovered now. When President Trump said slavery is worse now than it's ever been in the history of the world, I was like, that's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard in my life. Now that I'm looking at the stuff that's happening, I'm like, I don't know if it's going to say it's worse than ever in the history of the world, but I tell you what, real live, I'm going to go to that number again. And I know what you did was genuine because it was the same thing that hit me. I can't imagine a child being raped 30,000 times. I don't even know what that means. We're not even talking about over the course of her life, just for 3 years while she was in this thing. So America is the largest child sex trafficking. That's what America is now. This place is a cesspool of slavery that's being orchestrated and run by Jews, the same as the transatlantic slave trade. In this case, it was Mayorkas, who was the head of DHS, Jew, who's doing child sex trafficking in this country. And in our case, it was any number of Jews that were owning the ships and the plantations and the auction blocks. The Jews are doing the same thing now, except we were the centerpiece of the transatlantic slave trade. Right now, it's South Americans who are the centerpiece of the slave trade coming into the U.S. for the moment. My point being, going back full circle to what we were saying, I do want somebody to hurt once we get up.
I don't believe,
and I'm not no Guatemalan, but yo, I don't want to hear about no child getting raped. I'm because if you'll do that to them, you'll do that to ours.
That's right. Oh,
you
no
can't
doubt.
Convince me that you're just doing that to them. You'll do that to anybody. You did it to us. And I'm gonna tell you what it told me. We think that we know the horrors of slavery, but when that child interviews And it came out, you know, that they estimated about 30,000 times that she had been raped over them 3 years. I said, we have no idea how bad slavery was. Because we don't have a way to quantify. We say, yeah, they would rape our women at discretion. We really don't know what at the discretion meant. Because if they're doing that now in America from Guatemala, what the heck was they doing when it was legal in America to our people?
Mm-hmm.
I can't even conceive it. And the boys, the ones that like boys, what were they doing to the boys? How frequently did those boys get ravaged? I don't even have a, man, like I said, I want somebody to hurt. I ain't no problem with it.
Yeah. You know, deviant sex behavior is so prevalent in Western culture. You know, homosexuality, bestiality, pedophilia. I caught a piece about 3 or 4 years ago, maybe, yeah, even before then, on Boys Town in Omaha, Nebraska. How Boys Town was being used to funnel boys to prominent individuals. One of them was Antonin Scalia, who was the Supreme Court Justice, who was getting, have you heard about that?
I didn't know it was Scalia, but I definitely heard a boy sound and Larry King.
Yeah. Yeah. Was Antonin
matter
Scalia.
Matter of fact, can I stop you for a minute?
Sure.
I want to say something you just said. It goes right to what we're talking about. All right. And here it goes right to what you're talking about and the damage that's done to African people when we're in these Western cultures. Okay. You're talking about Boys Town and Scalia being a judge, but he was getting these children delivered to him from
mm-hmm.
a black man named Larry King.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Larry King was running Boys
right.
Town.
Right. That's true.
Now,
that's right. Right.
Right.
Yes.
Now, why am I bringing that up? Right now, the guy I told you named Ryan Matta, who's talking about the sick, perverse things that are happening in Guatemala. He does a video. You got to go see him on Twitter or Rumble. Put in Ryan Matta, M-A-T-T-A. You got to watch this stuff. Right now, the ambassador to Guatemala, who they now, according to him, have accounts of him shooting people while he was down there at parties he has. He has parties like Sean Combs' parties, where they have a bunch of sex. They come in, you see them raping boys and all that kind of stuff. So this is stuff they say is documented. And guess what? Is he white? Nope. Is he Hispanic? Nope. He's actually black. So you got a black ambassador to Guatemala who Brian Matta is saying is raping boys and is known for raping boys, has all kind of sex parties like Sean Combs, and is sponsoring and helping supporting the child sex trafficking industry and exploitation of children over there and mass economic corruption. And this is what happens when black people get into this Western madness.
That's right.
Just like Larry King and Boys Town that you were talking about with Scalia.
Since
that's why we got to pull out of this thing.
That's right.
When we say we don't support homosexuality, homophilia, pedophilia, homosexuality, why? Because what good is it fighting them if we become them? What are we fighting? If I got a pedophile in the house raping my sister, why am I fighting the white police officer outside that's pulling me over? What am I fighting? What am I fighting?
This whole system is just decadent. It's just evil, man. That's why I mentioned last week that, you know, in the Bible, and it's coming up real soon because Easter's coming up, you know, Passover's coming up, you know, and the Exodus. Well, the Exodus didn't happen historically. That's proven. There was no Exodus. There was no thousands of Israelis or Jews or Hebrews in Kemet. It didn't happen. But the reality is we need Exodus. We need to get the hell up out of here. Just like Bob Marley said, Exodus, the movement of the people, the hell up out of here. But before, I'm going to take some calls, okay? Brother Kamathi?
Let's do it.
You brothers and you, many of you are already in the queue. Oh, here you go. Brother Irv, good afternoon.
Robert Oshie, you know I'm chomping at the bit listening to you two brothers. You two kings speak about these issues that that I've been speaking about for a very long time. Brother Jeannie, thank you for coming on the show. You are fantastic. You are a fearless warrior in this fight that you've taken on as a life's work. You know, and it reminds me of, and I'm not comparing you to anybody, but it reminds me of Dr. Henry Clark. He said one time, I could have done anything in my life, but this is what I've chose to do, is to enlighten my people about their history, because you know, like I know, history is current events. Baba Jeannie, most Caucasians want us to know the vanilla version of slavery. The vanilla version is the one where you spit in the water, you know, and they and master gets sick and the house catch on fire, but they never tell you the perversion that's involved in slavery. Slavery was more about, you know, building the country, but they also were about pleasuring themselves. That's what Caucasians do. And now you're absolutely correct. We are taking on the traits of them as they, what they do, we do. We wear their hair. We put their hair in our head. We wear their clothes. I speak English. Brother Jeannie, I ain't never been to England. Well, yeah, I've been to England, but I'm not English. But you're absolutely correct. Dr. Henry Clark said something also. He said, don't let Caucasians mediate your fight. In the Congo right now, Zimbabwe's fighting the Congo, and the Congo's calling the United States to come in and help them fight these Congolese who are stealing the people next door to them are stealing their minerals, so they're going to call in the Americans to come help them. Don't call the Americans to come fight your brothers, because that's how this whole thing got started in the first place. Don't like I say about the Native American, don't bring them here and sit them down at the table and let them eat. Take the food out to the boat. Let them come to the drive-thru. But don't let them come in and mediate your differences, because they're going to manipulate you into fighting each other over these resources. And that's what this is all about. Brother, you said something else also, and I'm going to stop after this. You said fighting them, like Baba Oshi said, it should be a collective. And that's because we have to fight a system with a system. Every time I listen to you, Baba Jeannie, you have a well laid out, organized plan as to how to do this. You don't just say, oh, we're going to go get them. It's all laid out on how we are to conduct ourselves, how we are to think about Erugu, so that we can be more effective. And not just, like you said, the Haitian was surgical in what they were doing. We burned the fields. We poisoned the water. We back up. And eventually, you have to fight these people on the ground with everything that you have, and because that's what they do. When the French leave, they burn the bridges. When the French leave, they burn down tear down the buildings they built. They tear up the railroad, because that railroad wasn't for you. Those buildings weren't for you. Those buildings were for them to steal your resources.
But
no, brother, you are doing some amazing work.
Yes, he is.
You are fearless, and that is what I admire about what you're doing. I'm glad you didn't go in sports, because you'd probably be in somebody's Hall of Fame. Because once you're like a pit bull. Once you grab on it, and this is why the Jew is so, and I'm going to stop. This is why the Jew, when you say something about a Jew, they quickly jump on it. They jumped on Kyrie Irving with both feet, and all he did was download a book. Because they know if you pull back that first layer of that Jew, you'll look under there and you'll see all this demonic behavior, sadistic stuff, and you'll go, wait a minute. That's why I want to see Epstein's manifest. They ain't going to show you that. Or the redacted version. What does that mean? Because they understand. And let's be clear, AIPAC, or whatever it's called, the Jewish lobby, they grab these senators and make them sign a paper to say you pledge allegiance to Israel. And that is the truth. Obama signed it. They all signed it. So if you notice what Trump is not talking about, and I'm not, Trump can do whatever he wants. He ain't talking, in that speech he ain't saying nothing about Israel, did he? And this boy just cut the electric off last night. I saw that on Al Jazeera. He cut the electric off. How do you do that? What kind of man do you have to be to cut the electric off to women and children?
Evil.
And if he will do that to people that look like him, what you think he'll do to your black? Well, anyway, brother, thank you for letting me speak. I appreciate it. Let somebody else come.
Right on, Irv. I know you're going to hang on, yes, brother. Appreciate you.
Yo, for sure. I say.
Those who are on the queue, hit star twice. Get in the call. Hit star twice. We're on the line with Ayo Kamathi.
Do we have somebody else or respond to that?
No, go ahead and respond. Go ahead and respond.
Okay. So I'm going to respond. And this is something I'm just sharing things. I'm glad you called me because there's things that I've been seeing and I don't always I used to do stuff myself. Now I'm more in preparation mode and planning. So it's when you people like yourself call that have great forums that I can drop some things that I've been seeing as I'm studying what we're dealing with. There's a shift that has occurred internationally. And I think most of us have seen it, but we can't articulate it. And I'm about to articulate it. And then it'll probably, hopefully, it'll bring some clarity to people in terms of, I think most of us can feel like a cloud. I don't know if you feel that, but I feel like a lot of people, I'm feeling like there's some kind of cloud on the world. Like, it just, stuff doesn't feel right. What's happened is, traditionally, what they do when they want, talking about white folks, Jews, when they want to get something, they want access to your resources, for instance, they will do things that commit acts of genocide in order to get those resources. Or if they want a regime change, they will do things that lead to genocide or that create genocide so that they can get a new leader in that position. What we're facing now, there's a shift, and it's a dangerous shift, but it's very slight. Now, in the world we live in, they do things they present things that they want in order to create genocide. In other words, they used to say, I want the resources in the Congo, and then they go in there and create wars and people are killing so they can get access to the resources and take them out. Now it's, I want to kill everybody in the Congo. So let me say we're going on a resource war and have people fighting over resources. So the things that we're seeing, like in Palestine, it looks like they want Palestine to be Israel. No, they want to exterminate those people in that region. So they create a facade that they're fighting over something religious or something. Everything that they have in the hopper for everything, they give a reason why it's happening, but the actual end result they're looking for in every instance is genocide. So they say, oh my God, COVID, something called COVID is out here, you know, spike protein they put out there. Oh, we need you to take an injection. So it looks like they really want to get people injected to do X, Y, and Z. No. They really want to kill masses of people. So they say they need you to get you injected. So some of us are saying, yeah, they're trying to push the pharmaceuticals. They're trying to make a lot of money. No, they're trying to kill everybody. But they're making it look like it's about the pharmaceuticals. Every single thing that they're doing on the planet now is designed in the interest of the extermination of people. That's the end goal. It's the direct goal. Like, this, the stated goal that they're going for. Then they present something else that we end up fighting over, which we should, but that's not the real objective. It's a shift in how the world is working, which makes it more dangerous than it's ever been in the history of the world.
You know, when Bill Gates had, I don't know if it was a TED Talk or whatever the hell it was, addressing to a crowd of people, he said, we have created a vaccine that will assist in population control. And it's still out there. I think you can still find it. It's definitely a slip. Because when you create a vaccine, you're creating a vaccine for an illness that has affected the population to eradicate that illness. But he's saying we created a vaccine to eradicate humans, to deal with population control. And whose population do they want to control? It's surely not Europeans.
No, that's not true. That's not true. That's not true.
Okay, okay.
That's not true.
Talk to me.
It used to be that way.
Okay.
It used to be that way. I'm not disagreeing with you that it used to be that way. We always knew the answer traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Gates might not be his objective to be controlling European population. He's trying to kill black folks, like we clear on that, and Indians and anybody that's not
right.
But the Jews who he's working underneath,
they're
killing everybody.
Yes.
They're killing everybody.
Yes.
So this war with Russia,
mm-hmm.
this war with Russia, Ukraine, and the U.S. and NATO, that ain't designed to kill black people.
Right.
They're trying to kill white folks. So, and then, yeah, the one you're talking about, it's online. You can go put in TED Talks, TED Talk with Bill Gates. He said, if we do a really good job with vaccines, we can decrease, and he was showing the African continent, he was talking about Africa, we can decrease the population 10 to 15%. So what you're saying, the illness that they're trying to fix is us in their mind. Me and you are the illness. So the injection is not designed to help anything, to help them kill us. And you, I'm so glad you used it because it's a perfect explanation to correlate to what I'm saying here.
Mm-hmm.
Now they present something as a vaccine, but what it really is genocide. Everything, when they say climate change just means genocide. It means we're going to go and kill all of your animals because they're carbon. It's too much carbon. What is carbon? People are made of carbon.
Mm-hmm.
Brother, I'm carbon. You're
right.
Carbon.
That's right.
People are made of carbon.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying it's too, like they're telling us right in front of our face, the carbon index is too high. That means there's too many people. Like, so now they're saying we gotta control how much carbon. That means you gotta kill people. Like they use fancy language until we understand what they're saying. And so every single objective that they have is designed at the end of it. All of them only have one objective, and that's to kill us. And it's not that, again, it's not that I'm trying to defend no white folks. Never liked them, never will. I'm just being real. The Jews is out here killing now. If we don't get to the point of understanding what's happening, okay, I don't want to say it. For those of us who are African, all we care about is our own people. I get it.
Right.
So
right.
I'm not saying that to try to make us love everybody. I am saying this, though. The reason the Haitians were able to be successful in victory, they understood this group doesn't like that group, and that group doesn't like that group. So we can actually beat them because we can join with this group. They're not our friends, but they hate them. In other words, they looked at not their opinion or their feeling. They looked at the actual logistical layout of the battle they were facing. What I'm saying is I didn't create this war. The Jews are doing it.
Right.
The Jews are exterminating everybody, and that includes whites.
Then that's
so
why
we say
that's why you joined on. That's why you joined on with some groups. Yeah. I'm sorry, brother.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I want to say this because it's important.
Okay.
When we say, again, I know we're African-centered and we're only concerned about ourselves, and I'm not saying we shouldn't be, but for the leadership, like everybody else can talk like that, and even we can talk like that because we're concerned about ourselves. But I just want to be clear. We actually want to have some precision in the diagnosis because of one thing. Since the Jews are exterminating white people too, what we know is that when things get bad for white folks, they come to kill us. It don't matter who did it. They find some excuse and reason. Jeffrey Epstein done raped as many white girls as they are on the planet. Got a whole international ring, but then they saying black men are raping white women. It's like ridiculous. We already know Jeffrey Epstein's the one raping our women. It doesn't matter. We're always the fall guy for white aggression. Why am I saying that's important? When they're saying we're being killed. Am I out here to save white folks? No, but I am willing to do this. Yeah, we've been enslaved, we've been killed, and now the same thing's happening to you, white folks. Well, they already know what's happening to them. Well, if I'm not doing it to them, and they're not doing it to them, then they have to say, well, who's doing it to me? So now they have to have the courage to say, it's this Jew, which now puts us in a situation where instead of fighting them and we get turned on, they are forced to have to deal with the fact that the people that are killing them are Jews. So when we say, well, it's not a criticism. I'm just saying we want to be technically correct. Actually, they are killing white folks. That's that's white folks who want to defend themselves. But we don't want to say they're not killing white folks because we'll be under the false impression that we got to fight the white folks too necessarily. And in this first phase of it, if we say, these injections are killing everybody in America. There's a lot of white folks who would hear that. And unfortunately, I'm going to be honest, there's a bunch of our people who gonna fight with us. So what we want to do, we want to have as many people on board with saying don't take these shots as we can. And we don't, it's not up to us. Sometimes it's going to be black people. That's our team. Sometimes it's going to be white folks. Sometimes it's going to be Asians. Whoever says don't take these genocide jabs, they part of the team. And then we got to say who's doing it so that the aggression that comes out doesn't come in our community. We don't get the finger pointed at us. People can do whatever they want with the Jews. Don't come over in our house. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Bob.
No. I you made the point, you know, and believe me. Well, let me get another caller in. Good afternoon, brother. How you doing, Jay? Oh, Jay's not there. Okay. When you get back, we'll check with you then. We have a few others in the queue. I'm not going to open up the line. You open up yourself. Hit star twice. Yeah. Okay. Jay's back. All right, Jay. What's up?
Sorry about that. What's happening, brother Genie?
How you doing, brother?
Good. Listen, I just wanted to ask you right quick. Where do you see the direction of Burkina Faso heading based on the work that young warrior is doing?
Excellent question, brother. Thank you for such a question. I would say if we here help with the things that we might see, we don't know. They're doing such a great job. We don't know what they don't know because they're doing such a good job. It's like, it's almost like they know everything. But let's assume that there's something that we've gone through, whether it's what we're talking about with these injection wars, whether it's with the feminism, all of these different things they use to undermine us. If we take our support for them to make sure that the things that they undermine us here with don't happen to them, in my estimation, the way they're moving now, their potential is absolutely positively unlimited because it's not Burkina Faso. See, if it were Burkina Faso, I would say, I don't know what's going to happen. I would feel more threatened. Burkina Faso is the smallest of the three nations. It's Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger. He is the voice, he's brilliant. I mean, he's a phenomenal leader, but all three nations are moving together in unison in the proper direction. It's unlimited, the capacity. Right now, they just took a brother from Zimbabwe who has technology where he can take a television and not plug it up into anything. It's not plugged up in anything, and he can get it to receive radio waves that are just in the air and power your TV.
Mm-hmm. I saw that.
They worked with him.
Yeah.
They worked with him, brought him in to make a car that works off of radio waves. I want everybody to stop. Just stop. Stop. They now have a car they've tested. Like you said, he's moving at record speed. They riding around the car, no gas, no battery. It has a whatever it has, I don't know the technology, to pull radio waves out of the air and hit it, and now that thing's riding down the street, which means you don't have to stop at the gas station. You don't have to stop and plug it up for electric. So what does that mean? That means, to the brother's point, where are they going? And this is in Burkina Faso. Man, they about to go through the universe. There's a however. And this is why we got to be so important in this fight. We got to realize we got to step up. We already know what they're going to want to do because you're now talking about the potential with black business people getting involved. Yo. You're going to put the gas station out of business. You're going to put the oil companies not out of business, but they certainly not going to have the dominance in petroleum and wealth anymore if you have this type of technology. And that starts with a car and home appliances, but there's no telling where this kind of thing can go that they're doing. They're doing some old – it almost reminds me of the movie Black Panther. They're doing incredible technology. Like you said, at the snap of a finger, the things that, and they're not talking about it.
They're doing it,
and we find out after it's already – the car's already riding down the street. And we're like, wow. So my point being, we know that the more they do stuff like this, the greater a threat they are to everybody the way things are done right now in the world. So what our objective has got to be – because, see, I want people to understand what I'm saying. When you make a car running off a new technology made by an African, we now control the new technology that's the next Google or the next computer. When the computer was first made or the cell phone, like, it's the next wave in technology of clean energy. Like, there's nothing really comparable to what we're talking about right now. When you do that, if we industrialize with that and organize and collect with that and protect it, we now become the biggest energy business people on the planet with that technology.
Mm-hmm.
Which means what? Other races of people are going to want to take that technology and use it for their interests. So we got to say, nope, this is ours. And that means the same threats that you want to make them have messing with that technology, we're going to make sure that you have if you try to mess with that technology.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We got to get invested in it. There's no limit right now with the things that are happening in the Burkina Faso and those three ladies with the technology that they're employing. And they haven't even started yet. I mean, this is just the beginning. That's how far it's going to go. Let me say this and wrap it up. It's going to go as far as we as African people globally ensure that it goes.
That's right.
Because they are out the door.
Yeah, we got to protect it. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, you have not seen no African development over the last maybe 10, 20 years in the manner in which those three countries are. And hopefully we could unite behind them because, South Africa, Ghana, and, Nigeria and all these other so-called famous places on the continent, their leadership is not moving forward on the level that this brother is. I just hope that the ancestors protect them long enough to put together a couple of brothers like him who will be there to step right in, because he's doing everything that it seems you need to do. He's definitely about the land. He's about feeding his people, and he's about educating his people. You know, it makes one think about Gaddafi. You know, whatever issues one will have or had with Gaddafi, you must remember where he took his people to, and now look where his people are at today. That right there should be the case study on dealing with these bastards and how you must treat them as being only one thing, the enemy to your survival and your people's survival. So I'm just enjoying watching the brother, seeing the brother build and develop the country, and I'm just hoping that the ancestors protect them every day because, you know, the reality is, Oshie always talk about getting out of here. Hey, you know, it may be a situation where a group of our people today that have the strength to go there need to go there and help build the country and move it forward, because I believe that the brother will embrace you if you have something to offer. And, you know, we got a whole bunch of engineers and a whole bunch of other, skilled laborers out of work. And it seems like they're going to be even more out of work. You know, somebody may need to figure out how to bring those brothers together, educate them, and get them the hell out of here and send them home to help develop those three countries further, because it ain't like you at 35, 40 years old here today, you lose your gig, and this cracker gonna now hire you. Hey, maybe somebody needs to put together something on that level to find them and have somebody, come in and give them the necessary cultural consciousness to be able to go home with those skills, because I've said it for years, and I believe if you have a respect and a desire to go home and you have a skill, I believe these countries like a Burkina Faso will
embrace you
mm-hmm. and take care of you better than America ever will. But hey, you know, who knows? Maybe will happen before we leave the planet. But as always, Brother Genie, keep up the good work, man. You're doing what you're doing, and it's always a beautiful thing to hear you articulate our struggle.
Right on. Ashe. All right.
Ashe.
Mm-hmm.
Ashe.
Yeah. I believe that as well, that brothers and sisters in the diaspora, if you have skills and you are sincere and you want to move the continent and the people on the continent forward and to manage its land, to manage its resources, to make Africa competitive, and you are willing to do that, please, I believe you would be embraced. Now, there's some places you wouldn't, because the continent is big. And what Brother Ayo was talking about is that western portion, and more countries are joining them. I believe Ghana is making that move. Senegal is making that move. You know, the smaller countries that are near Burkina Faso, Togo, and so forth, you know, may make that move to solidify Western Africa as the place on the continent that's going to move the continent forward and hopefully be the model whereby other countries and the people, because that's the point. If the people on the continent see how what those other countries have done for the people, elevated them, took them out of abject poverty, brought them into a better state of living, better food, better education, better housing, better health care, because of all that they're doing, then if I'm whoever I am as the leader of such a Western country or middle country or Southern country and is not doing it, those people should rise up, kick my ass out, and bring in the leadership that will join them to make the living conditions better for those people as well. It's like a domino effect, I believe.
Absolutely. Couldn't say it better.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man, you know.
Dr. John Henry Clark always said that all we need is one good example.
I say.
And what's so beautiful is that right now we got three mm-hmm. good examples that are working as one example. I mean, how could we have done it better, man? Three kings.
Yeah.
What else?
Three kings. That's say.
One
after. That's say. That's right. That's right. That's a little, man, I know my buddy Irv, who was on first, who's out of Baltimore. He's now in L.A. You know, he just raves about it, man. You know, and I know that me and him and some others who listen to this program, I know that one day we're going to visit to physically see for ourselves what has been done, what can be done, and what is going to be done. Because, you know, when you are a African and you've been here for so long and you've seen the ups and downs, the trials and tribulations that we have experienced, the beliefs that somehow these crackers are going to do right and be right because of our protest, because of our marching, our disturbances, and so forth and so on. And then, of course, legislation happens, and then there's a program here and a program there. And the next thing you know, because of Caucasian white backlash, those programs are gone. It happened during Reconstruction. It happened during affirmative action. Happened during the New Deal. It happens. It always happens. It's happening now. So for us who are understand this dynamic, we don't look to the government of the United States. We don't look to crackers for nothing. We
We look to ourselves and we look to models of what's happening. And now, as you said, there's no better model than what's happening in Burkina Faso, Niger, and Mali. There's no better model. And I'm hoping that the other countries on the continent, you know, join that model. Join that model. Yeah.
Yeah, that's unification. That's what it is. One Africa. That's what we want to see.
That's what we want to see. One Africa. You know, in Ghana, there's a sister from New York, and her husband, he who had passed, he was a firefighter like me. In fact, it was great when I first went to Africa back in 96, I think it was. You know, but since that time, he was like driving like an Uber or something and had an accident. And unfortunately, he passed, you know, many years ago now. But fellow firefighter. And we always talked about, you know, the potential. So they had a place called One Africa right there on the ocean, right in between Cape Coast and Elmina Dungeon, not Castle Family.
I think I stayed there before.
You stayed in the chalet, little round chalets?
Yeah,
that's it.
Princess there.
Yes.
Absolutely.
That's it, brother. Yes, sir. One Africa.
I certainly did.
I always stay in the Dr. John Henry Clark room, chalet. I always try to get the job. And if it's not, there's Marcus Garvey and there's, you know. So, yeah. And, they had that idea, and it's a beautiful place right in between Cape Coast and Elmina Dungeons, you know, One Africa and the community that is there, the Black Hebrew Israelite community that is there, you know, Brother Cohen, who helped support. So, you know, it's going to happen, and I love to see it happening. I really love what is happening. And I wish more, it happens more. And I wish we could isolate people like Gogami and others, that we would assist the leadership in the Congo to join with the Sahel, as opposed to asking the United States or France or whoever else to come in and assist them with problems they're having with whoever. You know, rely on each other, rely on us, rely on a contingency of American Africans with expertise to come in. I mean, I tell you, I just saw a nice piece on Facebook with a sister who moved from the States here. And she moved, I cannot remember, I think it might have been Tanzania. And moved, and she said she loves it. Her and her family, they're doing quite well because, you know, it's a fraction of what, and living in a much better environment, a much more peaceful environment than where she was living here in the States. And so the resources they get from the States, because it is theirs, like a pension or some investments or property, whatever they have, and they take it there, it goes so much further. I remember we was talking to his brother last time I was there back in 19. He said, yeah, man, for Joe firefighter pension, man, you could buy a nice place. You could have a housekeeper. You could have a cook. You could have a driver, you know? And that's true. When we looked at the average cost of those things, you know. So I firmly believe that we're not going to all go. No, I know that, especially here in America, because America is America is the illusion of inclusion. You know, so we're not. But Brother, we almost out of time. Go ahead, wrap up for me, Brother Ayo.
Yeah, well, I appreciate coming on the program. I'm glad everybody tuned in. And I love the work that you're doing, brother. Anytime, we can talk.
Well, let me say this to you, because that has been true. You are a strong man, a man of your word. And I pray for you. I pray for your health, because you have a serious truth teller. You know, and I admire and respect you deeply. And I will always support you. Now, not just at that time in Baltimore.
Yes, sir. That's true support. Yes, sir.
That's right. Oh, that's the kind of support I'm going to give you, brother. That's for sure. I'll stand with you. Oh, I'll stand in front of you because you're younger than me. You know, I want to make sure you continue to go ahead. So, no, man. Yeah. Yeah. And so, every time I've asked you, we found a way to come on and talk to this listening audience. This, to me, was a very good conversation and many more to come. And I wish you continued good health. And I know that if you need to get out information, you can always come here. If you need support, you can always come here. All right, brother?
Yes, sir. Appreciate you.
All right, you too, Brother Ayo Kamathi. Brothers and sisters, once again, we thank him. We truly support him, and we wish him protection. Wish the ancestors to protect this brother. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. Not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shemhotep means go in peace. Esantesana means thank you. Abibi Fahorie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. You have a blessed and wonderful day. Peace, family. See you on Wednesday.